The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I was surprised some years ago when I learned that in the rules of Buddhist monks, you know, they have all these rules how they're supposed to live their lives, that in the rules of Buddhist monks, and they're allowed to defend themselves if they're attacked. Somehow I had the idea that they were supposed to just be nonviolent, and that meant not doing anything. But what they're allowed to do is they're allowed to basically block or push back if someone attacks them. They're not allowed to have weapons, so that limits how much they could do. But, you know, if someone is going to hit them, they can put up their hand and block the hit. And, you know, basically, they're not allowed to hit back, but they're allowed to defend themselves in that way. And if someone's going to push them off a cliff, they can push back to prevent being pushed off the cliff. And it seems pretty basic. It's also pretty instinctual to defend yourself that way. And but there is a caveat, or it is an additional part, that they're allowed to strike back or hit back or block as long as they do it with loving kindness. So that puts it in a higher level of requirement. So how many of us can say we could do that? So the training then for monastics is just to cultivate, develop, either develop their loving kindness to such a degree they can do it that way, or to be relaxed enough, open enough, peaceful enough, secure enough that they're not going to get have hate or hostility or anger when they involved in self-defense. So it's pretty natural, I think, for people to want to defend themselves. Pretty natural when something is going on wrong in the world to want to do something about it. And we have to be very careful not to use what we do, the approaches we have for living in the practical, everyday, external world as being what's most useful and how to deal with our internal world. And sometimes, you know, the two are treated the same. So if there's something wrong in the internal world, in the external world, if your dishes are dirty, you go and clean them, hopefully. If your house is a mess, you clean it up. If, you know, there's a big storm in your neighborhood, you go out and help clean up so that the cars can get by and whatever. You do things. Neighbor breaks her foot, you go and maybe bring your neighbor a meal, and you do things. And so this idea of doing and taking care of in the external world, which sometimes is appropriate, if that's then the attitude to where it takes care of our inner world, sometimes it can lead to all kinds of additional suffering. Because the inner world sometimes is not so amenable to be fixed in the same way as the external world can be. The inner world, because the inner world that we have, it works best if it's whole. And if you start dividing yourself against yourself, it doesn't work so well inside. So if you have some part of yourself that's the problem, and some problem part of yourself which is the judge of the problem, it's very easy for them to be at war with each other, to be at odds with each other. If you have some idea that this is not acceptable inside of me, there's a part of you that's doing that judging, or it's very easy for them to be at odds with each other. And so the idea of fixing and changing and defending and in the internal world lends itself too easily to a kind of divide within us, and not being whole, but being divided. And so one of the reasons why it's fairly popular in our Buddhist scene to emphasize acceptance as an important part of practice is in order to heal that divide, in order to be able to hold ourselves as being whole rather than being divided. And what many people have discovered in that it's not 100% popular to do this. Some people don't like this kind of overly accepting Buddhist attitude. But what a lot of people have found is that when you can turn towards your inner life and meet it with some kind of acceptance, some kind of okayness, it's okay, I'll just be here, show up and be present in a loving way or a kind way or open way, receptive way, whatever the word you like. And not to be against it, not to fight it, not to fix it quickly, but make space for it to be there, that it does a number of things. One is that it begins to soften and maybe dissolve entirely the divide between right and wrong, good and bad, self, the one self versus the other self, or whatever is going on inside. That's very profound for some people to feel that. Some people, their primary suffering they're trying to fix is that divide, but they don't realize the divide is there, so they're always trying to fix what's on the other side of the divide. They don't realize it's the divide is the problem, not what's on the other side. So it begins to heal the divide. The other is that many people have discovered that there seems to be, people describe it different ways, or attempt to describe it different ways, there seems to be a natural intelligence inside, a natural wisdom inside, a natural process inside that can, the inner life can unfold in a way that probably has more wisdom to it than ever you would ever figure out. So if you're on one side of the divide deciding this is what has to happen, you know, as if you're all-knowing and wise and know the intricacies of your psychology and life and heart, and you have some set of this is what's supposed to happen, you know, chances are you only have like a minuscule picture of the, you know, what's all going on. It's kind of like the analogy I like. It's kind of like, you know, if you cut yourself, and you have a cut, the process of healing that cut is phenomenally complex. The antibodies and the hormones and the cellular and the neurological stuff that all gets marshaled together to heal that cut, it's probably a very, very complex of physiological processes going on. And my guess is that none of us have the intelligence. If we knew everything that's required, none of us have the intelligence to really orchestrate that. But there's, you know, it can be orchestrated inside. The system knows how to do it. And I believe in the same way that's true with our heart, that our heart is probably more complex than we can track and take care of ourselves. And so there's something very respectful about, our physiology, our body, if we just keep the wound clean and let the system take care of itself. There's something very respectful about our heart, our inner life, if we kind of keep it clean and allow some inner healing, some inner unfolding, some inner growth to happen on its own. And what is that that needs to happen? We don't know what's going to happen. And that sense of willingness to trust that unfolding is one of the things a lot of people have discovered through doing kind of accepting mindfulness, to be present, to be accepting of it, what's here, to turn towards it. And because the inner life has a different, needs something different from us than necessarily what the outer life needs to have. The inner life doesn't mean that you have to then, it doesn't translate to automatically then being accepting of everything in your external life. Not everything should be accepted. So you can be naive about this. But in something like meditation practice, or in the quiet times of your life, or various points in your life, it's a really profound thing is to spend time with yourself and not be at odds with yourself in any kind of way, but to open to who you are as if it's okay, as if it's completely fine, and then make space for it and let some of this unfolding, some of this healing, some of this deeper discovery of what's there and what can show itself unfold as it wishes. Part of the wisdom of this is that sometimes when you do this, turn towards the inner life, accept it, hold it, be present for it, what unfolds is not particularly endearing. It doesn't look, you know, particularly wonderful. But rather, what's unfolding inside, sometimes what needs to happen is sometimes the great difficulty, the challenges, there's a backlog of difficulty that needs to come to the surface. And so to be put yourself in a situation where it's safe and appropriate to allow that to arise and to continue getting out of the way and trusting it, to hold it with an acceptance that's not naive, that's not sinking into it, that's not believing it, but holding it in acceptance where you're the adult. And as the adult, you can hold it all. You can be with it all as it is. So I hope that you will try this. I hope the wonderful, it's a little bit like Aikido, where you, or Judo, where you go with the force of your opponent. You kind of accept it and take it and see where it goes and kind of use it. So it's the same thing with our inner life, too. Rather than to fight it. And I've done this with my thinking mind. There are times in my practice where rather than letting go of my thoughts, my distractions when I'm meditating, I notice I'm distracted, I'm thinking, and I go along with it, keep thinking, just go along with it. And that's kind of like I side up next to it, and I go along with it, and I'm not going to fight it or block it or say it's wrong. And then when we're kind of there together, then I bring my thinking mind back to the present moment. And that works much better for me than, you know, this is, I can't do this, you know, this is wrong, and I have to let go and come back and, Gil, what are you doing? So I hope this gives you a flavor, a sense of something that might be called acceptance practice or a receptive practice or an open practice to our experience, and how it can be useful for you.